Hello and welcome to Soundcheck, a new program about issues, ideas, and people from Raven Radio, KCAW, in Sitka. You can listen to Soundcheck online at our website, kcaw.org, or download Soundcheck as a podcast from the iTunes Store. I'm your host, Robert Woolsey. Peter Williams is an artist in Sitka. He makes a variety of garments and craft objects from the hides and furs of seals and sea otters, marine mammals that he hunts himself. Williams can do this because he is Alaska native, a Yupik Eskimo, and exempt from the federal ban on hunting and the Marine Mammal Protection Act. But Williams did not grow up hunting. He discovered it as an adult and discovered himself as he learned how to hunt. In today's soundcheck, Williams talks with KCAW's Holly Keene about his relationship to the environment and the animals he hunts. She began by asking him about his childhood.
Childhood's a trip. I don't know how to compare it to, childhood anywhere else, but certainly enjoyed the community and the environment. And I feel like there was a sense of freedom that perhaps I had in my childhood that maybe other children don't in other areas where the community is not quite as tight or close in ways Sitka is. Also, perhaps with the environment too, I feel like I had more space, more place to play.
So looking at Sitka as this amazing playground, were you more drawn to the woods or to the water?
To the woods when I was a kid. I grew up without a dad, and I grew up without a boat in the family. And those things kind of, in a way, I think, led themselves to me spending more time in the woods when it came to nature than the water. If those factors were different, I might have been drawn to the water more. I definitely enjoyed snorkeling a lot when I was a kid and getting out when I could, going fishing and things like that.
You were snorkeling in Sitka in this very cold water?
Yeah, it's not too bad. We got the Japanese current, so it's fairly manageable. You can get a wetsuit. And also being a kid helps.
Something about the resilience of nativity. So when did you learn to hunt?
I'd say I learned to hunt in my towards my mid-20s, so pretty recently. I think it's just been over the past few years that I've really understood hunting. It took me quite a while to figure it out. And so I have a mentor, a really great individual, Marty Wade Martin. I met him out on the water, and he helps me with advice, and was the first person who showed me how to skin a sea otter. But a lot of it was experimenting on my own, like talking with people and then going out and had a buddy, one of my best buds. He doesn't live in town anymore, but we would go out seal hunting together and then later sea otter hunting together and kind of just figured it out. He had a little more hunting experience than I did. Feels like it was more towards recently and with more of my rituals that I do now. With my hunting and more connection that I have now with hunting and the more view of spirituality that I have with hunting has really helped me grow as a hunter. It's hard for me. I think it's hard in general. Taking a life isn't easy. It's not like they portrayed in the movies. And there's a loss there. We're dealing with spiritual beings and we're dealing with beings that have emotions and that have a story and have family. When they give their lives and when you participate in taking their lives, there is a loss, and that should be felt. And I think there's kind of two ways to deal with that. One is to allow yourself to feel that and appreciate it and give thanks. The other is, I think, an unhealthy way to deal with that, and that is to belittle the animal. Call it dumb, call it stupid, or objectify the animal by turning it into a trophy. And I think that those ways are more done unfortunately, in American culture, is that the more the trophy or belittling an animal is in the process of that loss instead of accepting, giving thanks, one thing that I do is, and it's a ritual that I didn't always do, but it's a ritual that I have been doing now for quite some time, and it's really helped me, which is giving the animal its last drink of water, based off of Eskimo custom, and that moment of thanks. I think that's important, and it's really helped me with killing, and there's other rituals that I do, and there's other interactions and perceptions that I have when I hunt that's helped me.
You are an artist, and you use the sea otter pelts to create vests, hats, handbags.
Mm-hmm.
When you wanted to learn to hunt, was that in mind that I'm going to produce clothing, or were you interested in hunting first?
Well, I started trapping before I started hunting, and my interest with trapping wasn't really to make garments, but was to do this activity and get connected with the environment and the land and make some money. Within that, I found out that you get more money if you make something out of it, you add to the value. And then the Sitka Tribal Tannery started to open up. And so there was more talk about sea otters and seals and harvesting. And I understood, like a lot of people in this area, the past value of sea otter. It used to be called soft gold, how valuable it was, and only Alaska natives can hunt and work with it. Before I really got into hunting, I saw this as really something special and empowering and uplifting for Alaska natives, something we can empower ourselves culturally and economically. And part of why I actually started seal hunting before sea otter hunting, the reason for that was I noticed that my generation is losing the taste of seal.
Literally, the taste of seal.
Correct. Yeah. And the elders still have it. I thought it was something that I didn't want to lose. It's something that I didn't have in a way, but something I did have, you know, in my genes. So I started trying to hunt seals for that reason.
I know people in their teens or in their 20s, they're always looking for identity.
Mm.
And was this your first sort of attempt at finding your identity, or did you try on a few other hats?
Since I was very young, trying to figure out who I am and my place in the universe, struggled with that quite a bit. Struggled with that, being raised in a non-Native family and not looking like them. Struggled with that, with being Yupik, but being in a Tlingit community. Struggled with my identity as a man, being raised by a single mother. I've tried at various times to try to get in touch with myself. And I still do. I think it's an ongoing journey, you know, as we evolve and change in our lives, getting reconnected with who we are at this moment. As a child, I remember fantasizing and playing with one of my best friends would be about seal hunting and catching fish. You know, it's always been a part of me. But by hunting marine mammals, doing something that only Alaska natives can do, I really felt an immediate connection with my identity as an Alaska native.
You're listening to Soundcheck, a program about issues, ideas, and people in Sitka, Alaska. Today, Holly Keen is talking with hunter and artist Peter Williams. While the hunting of marine mammals is widely accepted in Alaska, it's not the case elsewhere. In order for Peter Williams to expand his business and career, he'd like to sell work outside the state. In fact, he'd like to enter the fur trade on the eastern seaboard. Holly Keen asked Williams about his success so far.
When you meet someone new, how do you introduce yourself? Are you an artist? Are you a hunter? What are you representing?
I think about now, like with my work with sea otters and trying to develop this industry, I really view myself as an artist, but also an activist and also a businessman. It's kind of neat to be able to wear all those hats in one job.
What's interesting about wearing those different hats is most people feel comfortable saying those things here in Alaska. Mm-hmm. So you have participated in certain markets, mm-hmm. like in Juneau, maybe mm-hmm. artisan sort of gatherings where you sell what types of things?
Yeah, so I've done some craft circuits, and this fall I went to Fairbanks and went to Juneau, both new craft fairs that I haven't been at. I sold pillows, headbands, scarves, a blanket, keychains, hats, but I've also made vests and mittens and purses. I sold a purse this fall, too.
And maybe we could talk about two things. One, you're wearing a vest, and I'd like you to describe it.
Yeah, so the vest I'm wearing is, it's Harbor Seal on the front, and it's sea otter on the back. And inside, it's lined with a red silk.
I saw the reaction of folks when you were walking through the radio station, and they all did the same thing. They all very tentatively asked if they could feel the fur, and maybe you could explain the common reaction that people get when they touch it.
Yeah, you can just see their whole physical being change and their face light up. They know that they're touching something special, and they know they're touching something very soft. I think it's something that makes fur special and beautiful is that it's not plastic, it's not concrete, it's from a living being. And it had a story, and it still has a story, and still has a spiritual connection, it still has an essence to it. And it's also very soft. And sea otter is it's really the cream of the crop there. And you can see that in people's reaction when they feel it. Last night I was with my roommate, and he's asking me about this vest I was working on. And I showed him this vest, and he's like, I just can't get over how soft this is. He's like, you know, do you, when you work with it? And he goes, you're probably kind of used to it by now, huh? And I go, no, actually, like I was just working on a scarf earlier tonight. Let me go get it. And I brought it out. I go, okay, now feel the fur you're feeling. And he could recognize that it was a really good hide is what I used for the vest. And I go, now feel this. And he goes, oh, wow. He goes, once you couldn't even think it got softer. Yeah, so it's interesting how they vary as well in the quality of fur.
And how long does it take you to produce, say, the vest that you're wearing?
I think the vest I worked on, that I'm wearing, I'm going to work on somewhere between 12 and 15 hours. I'm not sure. It's hand sewed. It's one of the early on that I've worked on.
It's stunning, and I liked how everyone had a very positive experience looking at it, and you letting them wear it, and just sort of having a moment with this handcrafted item.
For me, at least, and I don't know if this translates, but for me, I hunted the seal, and I hunted the sea otter, and I also tanned the seal, and I also tanned the sea otter, and I sewed it. And that really deepens, certainly, connection and relationship that I have with these animals and with this vest. And I don't know if that translates. I think it does. I think love and I think time translates in whatever you do.
It's interesting you use the word translate. You decided to venture outside of Alaska.
I did.
To see how your pieces translated, specifically to the East Coast.
Yes. I could reach a point in my career that I realized that I needed to brush up on some sewing techniques and kind of get some advice and network with some pretty experienced people in the fur industry. And just kind of see where I should take my business next. I felt like I wanted to get more direction with my business and come up with a little bit bigger plan. As well as I feel that I kind of hit a little bit of a ceiling in a way in Alaska with kind of a niche tourist market. You know, what I realized before I started hunting was that the empowerment that working with marine mammals and creating crafts and selling them can have for Alaska Natives, and wanted to get that into the high-end fur industry, high-end fur world. So that's been my vision over quite a few years. And so recently I went to Maryland and I went to New York City and I met with furriers there. I brought them my work. I was wearing this vest. I like New York City. There's something going on there that I just really like.
So you're meeting with these furriers. They are looking at your items. It's interesting because I'm not sure if fur has the same social acceptance as it does in Alaska. First of all, are they familiar with sea otter?
I was wearing this vest around when I met with them in New York, and the furriers would recognize the seal. from kind of the right beginning, and they would comment on it. They'd say, hey, that's a really nice vest. And then the second thing they would say is that's illegal in the States. And so I had to explain to them the exemption in the Marine Mammal Protection Act for Alaska Natives. This is part of my trip. That's part of why I'm there, is to let them know that, one, this is legal. Two, this is happening. Three, these products are available. And they recognize the seal. They didn't really recognize the sea otter. And I think that makes sense in the way that they were legally allowed to work with seal, and they were working with seal into the 70s. But with sea otter, there wasn't any around. It was almost hunted to extinction. And I don't know, too, if they're a little reluctant because of the misconceptions and I don't use the word stigma that comes with sea otter, because people think that they're on the brink of extinction and don't know that their populations are really rebounding in Alaska. Usually the reaction is like, hey, you know who you're going to have a problem with? You're going to have a problem with PETA. And from what I gathered with talking with these furriers, the Clubbing Seal campaign really kicked in their teeth. It was a campaign by animal rights activists that really stuck. They tried various other campaigns, but for whatever reason, the Clubbing Seals one really resonated with the public. Not only did that campaign bring a lot of bad PR, but it also generated lots of support, lots of membership, lots of money to these quote-unquote animal rights groups. Talking with furriers right now, it seems like their industry is really in survival mode. A lot of smaller furriers are going out of business. Talking with them, they view the economy and also the climate change as being big factors in the lack of their sales. And also the way that fur is viewed in America right now. It's not like it was 10 years ago. And they kind of view it being in just as kind of survival mode, which is interesting.
So how do you keep your chin up, the perseverance to create items that might be entering a dying trade?
I feel like I have no choice. I feel like it's something just really deep inside of me that this is my calling and that I'm on my path. And I view that being able to network with these furriers and for it to unfold in front of me the way that my career with marine mammals has unfolded in front of me tells me that this is my path.
So after the advice, the challenges, are there pieces now on the East Coast to be purchased?
Not yet. Hopefully soon.
Where do you see yourself as an artist in a year from now?
I hope that within a year, and within sooner than that, I'm gonna launch a line in New York.
That's very exciting.
Yeah, it is. I think the attitude on fur has changed a little bit. I also find in the environmental movement that there's some change there too. I think people are more focused on sustainability, and more of the old school thought of environmentalism of like a hands-off approach. I don't think that that's really in the movement today. And so I have hope as I give my talks and I give my presentations, I have hope of creating awareness of the work that I do and that other Alaska Natives do that is respectful and sustainable. This is about having a relationship and a connection with the environment. This isn't about exploitation.
Well, thank you very much for talking to me today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
That's KCAW's Holly Keene speaking with artist and hunter Peter Williams. Soundcheck is a program about issues, ideas, and people from Raven Radio, KCAW, and Sitka. To listen to this program again or to hear previous episodes of Soundcheck, visit our website, kcaw.org. You can also subscribe to our free podcast at the iTunes Store. I'm Robert Woolsey. Thanks for listening in on Soundcheck. Mm-hmm.